Good morning, and thank you for joining me for Triad Today, a weekly community affairs program on 98.7 Simon. I'm Charlie, your host. So many of us would like to experience different cultures, but international travel isn't always possible with our family and work responsibilities. So what if you could learn about another country from a real live person right in your home and be able to share all of the things you know and love about your area with them? If that sounds intriguing, then you and your family might be just the right people to host an international high school student. Michelle Bakke, the director of the Southeast Region of International Experience, is joining me this morning to tell us more about this life-changing experience. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Tell us about your organization and the mission of International Experience.
Sure, no problem. International Experience is a smaller organization. We're not as big as some of our competitors. We're nonprofit, and we began in 2002. We're owned by a German company. We have about 236 team members with about 51 different countries and about 2,500 host families. And our mission statement is really that we provide education, support, and guidance to enable a cultural experience by building real relationships between people. So it's bringing a culture and adventure to your family without ever having to leave your home.
Why is an exchange program important for high school students as opposed to waiting until they're adults and can go travel on their own?
Well, because high school is the age where they children are becoming adults and they're forming their opinions and their prejudices, if they're going to have them. It's great to experience the world and other cultures while you're young and impressionable and learn about the cultures, languages, customs, differences, and take away from that we're all really the same. We all smile in the same language. It just is a really good time for kids as they're forming their own opinions and becoming adults to help eliminate the prejudicedness of our world and help us embrace one another together.
Michelle, tell us generally how the program works.
So the program usually works simultaneously. While we are vetting host families here in the United States, the countries that we'll be working with are vetting the students. And so the process is sort of the same in that the host families are having background checks, they're having home interviews, the students are having school interviews, in-home interviews. The students have to be academically very focused. They have to be in good standing. They cannot be in trouble with the law or anything like that to do these programs. And typically this is the time we vet both families and students. Usually around the April, May, June time is when contact is made between the student that will be coming to your home and the family. And so you'll have several months to prepare and get to talk to them on FaceTime or email or however you communicate until they arrive. All the students arrive at the beginning of school. So typically in the North Carolina area, we begin school in August. So the students will start arriving a couple weeks before school. You do get to have some say in when they show up. Some families have last minute vacations and want the students to come right before school. And others would like to take a vacation with the students a few weeks early. 2 or 3 weeks early is usually okay with the visa to come a couple weeks sooner than school starts. So it really, the host family does have some say in that. And then the student arrives and they'll be with your family for either 8 weeks as a welcome family. Maybe you can't commit to longer than that, but you like the idea of doing this for 8 weeks while we find a permanent home for the student. Or you've committed to the first semester, which will end usually in January, and the child will go home. So that student would be here through the holidays until the end of the first semester. They don't go home for the holidays. And if you've committed to the full school year, the children arrive in August and they leave in June when school gets out. And they're here the whole time. They don't go home for holidays. They experience our traditions and learn about our families. And so that's how the program works. Usually you have the student for 2 months to 9 months in your home, and you live like a family.
Where do your students come from?
They come from all over, about 51 different countries we work with. We have a lot of students from Spain and a lot of students from Germany. And then the other countries fill in. We have students from Thailand, Mongolia, Italy, Croatia, Montenegro, Switzerland, Austria. There's just so many, about 51 countries they'll come from. And with some years, like we haven't had any from China at all in 2 years, and we won't have any Ukrainian students this year for obvious reasons. We do have some Polish students, however.
Do the students all speak English?
Yes, that's a great question. Yes, they do. The Department of State allows students to come over here with minimal English. Our organization really screens and vets these kiddos and makes sure that they speak well. And surprisingly, the host families actually get to see a video of the student on there speaking to them. And you can tell right away these kids have had English for several years. You know, they're not fluent, but they're close to fluent. I'd say our students that need the most help with English are our Thai students. And they're carefully interviewed. And if they don't pass the interview, they have to go back and study and figure out, you know, where their weaknesses were and try and prove that. They have several times to come interview with us. They're the only country that we really have to interview and make sure that their English is adequate. Because when they come here, the classes are in English and these students are not allowed to take ESL classes.
I'm talking with Michelle Bakke of International Experience. What do you look for in a host family?
So I look for a busy, stable American family. And that can look very different. That can be single moms, single dads, empty nesters, people that never had children, married couples, gay couples, couples with or without children, with or without animals. It looks very different. So if the family is a busy family and a stable family, then that's what I'm looking for. You don't have to have a lot of money to host a student. They're not coming here for big fancy houses and big fancy vacations. They're looking to come here and experience America, whatever that looks like. And they usually, normally there is a student for every family.
Of course, a lot of people may think it's a dangerous prospect for a young person to travel to the U.S. and stay in a home with strangers, but International Experience has a strict vetting process before they will approve a host family. Tell us about that.
So as far as vetting the host family, it is very similar to vetting the student. We get a criminal background check, a CBC, anybody over 18 years of age living in the home. And in addition to that, we do a home interview where we come into your home and we do a walkthrough and we get to see all the members of your family. Obviously, if they're older than 8 years old, we ask them, you know, if they understand what's going to be happening and that there's going to be another teenager coming into the home, and just make sure that everybody is, you know, feeling positive and happy about the experience. We also get to know the animals, make sure that they're safe and not scary or vicious, make sure that the people who applied to do this are the people they say they are, and the home is the home that they put on the application. References are checked. And the application itself has like 9 or 10 sections, including, you know, asking for pictures of your home. And so it's not an easy process. It's a good, solid process that will eliminate anybody that could be doing this, trying to do this for the wrong reason.
Actually, you know, we were discussing this on Facebook and I saw someone say, well, this sounds like an avenue for human trafficking. But you do everything absolutely possible to make it that not happen, correct?
Yes, ma'am. So these students are actually, I am going to be the main, I'm the regional director. I'm responsible for all of these kids that come in the Southeast region. And typically there's between 70 and 100 kids in our Southeast region alone. And I'm responsible for those kids. So even when my local coordinator vets these families, it still then has to be checked by me. And then in addition to that, it has to be checked by compliance. And in addition to that, we have a second visitor go out. So if the local coordinator would be in cahoots with some sort of human trafficking organization, which it has never happened, but I'm just saying, there are other people, there are other checks and balances to make absolutely certain that the students are safe. In addition to that, the students have several ways to communicate any type of danger to them. If they're feeling unsafe or like they're in danger, they have their local coordinator, they have their regional director, they have online their online application where they can go to and fill out reports with details of how they're feeling unsafe, and they also have their agent back at home where they began. So the amount of people that they have to go to if they should be feeling unsafe is huge. But we normally don't get to that point because there's so many checks and balances making sure the students, before they even get here, are coming to a safe home and safe family.
Wonderful. Michelle, what is expected of the host family during this time that they have the student in their home?
So I always tell my host families that I'm vetting that you should expect to have another family member, because that's exactly what you're going to do. The students will come in as a stranger, but slowly and very discreetly. It's almost like it just happens without even realizing. One day you say, oh my gosh, what am I going to do when this kid leaves? I'm attached to this kid. How did this happen? Mm-hmm. What's expected of the host family is really just to treat this student like your family member, like your nephew or niece or your own kid. You would provide food for 3 meals a day. That does not mean you're cooking 3 meals a day for these students. You can do, you know, you can cook the meals and the students can eat the meals. You can teach them how to cook the meals. Some of these kids come and they already know how to cook and they'll be cooking for you. What I do in my house is I make sure that I have food for 3 meals a day in case, because I don't cook breakfast or lunch. I cook dinners and we rotate. Everybody in my house, I have a big family, and we all sign up to cook one night. If there's extra people, then they team up with another student or another person in the home, and sometimes two people cook. So the host family would be expected to have food for 3 meals a day, a room for the student to be in, whether that be on their own or sharing with your own child, same gender, within 3 or 4 years of one another. That's fine. They can share a room. They have to have a permanent bed, though. So no fold-out sofas, no blow-up mattresses, no mattress just flung on the floor. They do have to have a permanent bed. And they can do a bunk bed. That's fine. And they can share a bathroom with anyone in the home. And then basic transportation. And what that means is the student is here to experience America. So riding the bus is part of our American experience when you go to school. So that's fine. The students absolutely are expecting to ride the school bus. But if there's after school activities or games or things where they may need basic transportation, especially in the beginning, then that would be expected because there'd be no other way for the student to, you know, do after school sports or clubs if they didn't have a ride home. But that usually is in the first 6 to 10 weeks until they meet friends. And then it's at the host parents' discretion as to if they allow the student to carpool. Typically, I say in my home, as long as their friends are on a valid license and not a permit, and then I speak to the student and make sure that I see a valid license, and then I'm fine with my students carpooling. So that's really all that's expected of the host family. It is a teenager, so you do have to provide rules, and you have to hold them accountable to the rules. But I have found in my own personal experience, my own children are much harder than students.
And what can a host family expect the exchange student to bring to the table?
So the exchange student will come with all of their own things, and they'll come with a monthly spending money from mom and dad. It's usually way above and beyond what is needed. They'll pay for all of their extra snacks because some of these kids are typical teenagers and they eat a lot. And the host family is not expected to pay for 5 meals a day, just 3. And so the students come with their extra money. They like to go shopping with the family and they have their extra snacks. Some of the boys might eat several times in the evening. Maybe they come home from school, they eat at 2, they eat at 5, they eat at 10. So that extra food they would provide themselves. They also provide all their school supplies and any of their personal items. And they also contribute to any excessive, like if you have to get an extra hotel room or an extra room in the beach house or an extra airplane ticket, they provide all of that. They also come with their own health insurance. So all of their medical cost is covered by their insurances. They also are very academically focused and driven students. These kids come, they don't need quite what the American students need, you know, with the hand-holding, reminding our students and sitting with them and making sure they're doing homework. You rarely have to tell an exchange student to do their homework because they are just disciplined that way and they get it done. And what you can expect is a lifetime of memories that you will make over the course of the time you have that student. It's incredible and it is life-changing. That's what you can expect.
International Exchange also provides a local coordinator to give support and guidance. What do they do?
So the local coordinator is somebody that lives local. We've talked about that I'm a regional director, and I'm ahead of about 7 or 8 states, and I can't be in all 7 or 8 states. So I am lucky enough to be here in North Carolina, which is very helpful. I can get to most anywhere I need to get to in a day. But local coordinators are literally right there. So like there would be a local coordinator in the Charlotte, Winston-Salem area or in the middle, since there is about an hour and a half difference between Winston-Salem and Charlotte. Sometimes they're people that are in the smaller suburbs of the area, but they're closer. So they're usually within 120 miles, 2 hours, from where the student and host family reside. And the reason that that's important is because if there's any issues at the school that the host family can't handle, or if there's any issues, if the student feels scared or endangered or something has happened and the local coordinator needs to get there, they normally can get there much faster than me as the regional director. So they provide support. They're in there. The Department of State says that organizations need to see the students a couple times a semester. I think it's twice. And be in the home once. We go above and beyond. Every other month, we see the student. So on the off month, like they come in August, we have to see them in August. We orientate them to the United States. We tell them all the rules of the organization, what they can and can't do, what they have to follow. And then we don't see them typically in September, but we do call them or we video them, FaceTime. And then we see them again in October. So it's usually every other month. And then in the meantime, each month we check in with the host family. The local coordinator does that as well. And then the local coordinator fills out reports, which go back to the country, letting the country know how the student is doing. The local coordinator is also there for urgent needs if there should be them, whether that's at school with the host family or with the student, if they're needed to be there. So they provide that kind of hands-on support that a regional director living, you know, having the region might not be able to get to quite as quickly.
And you're always looking for people who would like to be local coordinators. What does that job require and what can someone expect to get out of it?
So for a local coordinator, it's very flexible. It is a contracting job. So you do work this into other full-time jobs. When I first started with the company and was a local coordinator, I had 3 other jobs. And I loved being a local coordinator because you put into it what you want. There's different parts of being a local coordinator. Some local coordinators just recruit host families and they like to get the cash for recruiting host families. It's a nice bonus for them. Once they recruit a family that actually signs up and commits to hosting, then they receive a $200 bonus. We offer that to churches and everywhere. If you find a host family and they successfully host, you receive $200 per family, per new family. So that's kind of nice. Another aspect of the local coordinator is getting to supervise the students. You get to help the host family choose the student, and you get to supervise the student you bring over here. So if you're looking for a job to be with students, again, the commitment is every other month you visit the student, and on the off month, you're just calling and checking in with them. So it's, you know, it's extra money to add to your jobs, your full-time jobs. And in addition to that, you're working with teenagers from all over the world. And if you like working with kids, you have degrees in teaching or psychology. Many teachers, many coaches, many people in psychology and sociology choose to do this. They love kids in general. We have a lot of young people in their mid-20s that like to do this. They're still living out their youth, and they, you know, they don't have any children of their own. Maybe they're newly married or in a relationship, and they think it would be fun to offer their culture and their America to a student. We have several families that will do that. And there's so much that they can learn and so much that they can show students. Another great thing with being a local coordinator is you get to really set your own hours. You know, you can recruit families and then not supervise. You can say, I'll find host families, but I don't want to supervise the students. I don't want a bunch of teenagers. So then we find the local coordinator that wants to supervise. So there's, you know, you really get to choose. You can recruit, you can supervise. And it really fits into just about anything. Like I said, when I first started, I had three other jobs I was doing, and this one just was my favorite. I loved it.
I'm talking with Michelle Bucky of International Experience, a student exchange program. If someone's interested but just isn't sure about hosting a foreign student in their home, how do you address that?
So I try to find out what exactly the concern is, first of all. And then I try to talk to them and address the concern. I always friend. There are people that think it's, you know, they're worried this is a scam. So, you know, I offer to friend them on Facebook. I also have a Facebook site for host families that I allow them to come to where they can meet other people throughout the region that are hosting. And, you know, once you're part of that group, you can reach out and message them and say, hey, I'm thinking about hosting. Tell me about it. I also offer references of host families that are current or past. There are some people that are just so nervous about it that they're scared that they're going to either get the wrong kid in the house. So I kind of show them and tell them ways to, you know, make them feel better about it. Like, for instance, I always remind them, you are a volunteer. You are not committed. Just because you agree to host does not mean you're committed. If for whatever reason you have a family emergency, you're going to move, something comes up urgently where you can't host anymore, or you and the student don't get along, all you have to do is say, I need to move the student for this reason or that. And I would hope that you could give me 2 weeks to find a family, but if you couldn't, that's why we have local coordinators. We'll come get the student and take them off your hands. So I try to, you know, offer security to anybody that is worried. You know, well, if I say I'm going to commit in August, what if I can't make it to May? You should never be miserable in your own home. If this is a miserable experience, then you just let me know and we'll move on.
Do you have any success stories or special experiences that you've witnessed that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I have more than I could possibly share. I guess if I could share one story, it would be my own. I'm a single mom of 7 children. I decided to do this 4 years ago, and I took 2 students into my home. It was actually, 3 years ago. I took 2 students, a German and a Spaniard girl, and that was the year COVID hit in March.
Oh, wow.
And all the students were being sent home from all organizations because the world was in a panic. And I was thinking to myself, why are we all panicking? It's worse over there than it is here. So I said to the organizational head, I said, look, you know, I'm not throwing my kids out. If they have to go, then they have to go. But, you know, I'm fine. They can stay. Well, they reached out to those students' families. And as I said, one was an Italian girl and one was a Spanish girl. And the countries of Spain and Italy were just in absolute. It was so much worse. They were getting outside 15 to 20 minutes a day because most of them live in high rises. Mm-hmm. And here I have a backyard and I have a neighborhood. So even through COVID, my kids were able to play outside. So both families wanted my girls to stay here with me. They said this was the safest place. And there was going to be no guarantee of when the kids were going to go home if I didn't send them in March because the world was in, you know, havoc. And I ended up keeping both girls for their families. And both girls left the end of June. And it was probably the best experience of our life. I homeschooled them because school's all closed, as you know. And I had them at home just like my own kids. And it was incredible. The memories were just unbelievable. And we, you know, still today, their families and I are in, you know, we're in touch all the time, because that was a time where they were like, please don't send them here. This is, it's, things are terrible in our country, you know, keep them there. And I was able to offer them sunshine and a backyard and walks along the railroad tracks and stuff that weren't going to be able to be offered back at home. And the girls were just so thankful. And it was just really an amazing experience for all of us. You know, we walked through COVID together and have all these memories. And like I said, today, Mylan from Spain is completing nursing school and coming back. She'll probably marry the boy she met here in high school that year. And my little girl from Italy is supposed to be coming to visit me this summer. So we're now, you know, almost 3 years out with the girls. And so, you know, they're young adults. And and I had something to do with that. I helped influence those girls and I helped make their dreams come true.
I think it's important to point out that it also doesn't matter what size of a town or city you live in or the area, because I remember many families in my small Indiana hometown hosting exchange students. And, you know, from our point of view, it's like, oh, this town's so boring. Why would they want to live here? But they seem to love it. And it shows them that the whole United States isn't just New York City or the big places they see on TV, correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. These kids come here to be in America. They're not coming for trips to New York and trips to Disney and trips to California. All that is nice, but that's not why they're coming. I always kind of compare it to the way we feel here in America about the old days and how sometimes we think living in the little house on the prairie days would be pretty cool. You know, what I did to my family 1 year is I took them to an Amish farm because that was the closest I could get to being in the early days of the little house on the prairie days. So it's kind of like that. They're over there in another country dreaming about our America, whether that's in a rural city or a big giant city or whatever that is. They're coming to live our life and immerse in our towns and our cities and the difference between where they are at home and here in America. And yeah, a lot of them come for a total change. A lot of these kids, you know, if they don't play sports, they come to play sports because in their schools, sports aren't offered. If they play sports in their countries, it's usually with a club. It's not at school. So coming here to our countries in some of these small towns and being able to make the teams and play sports is life-changing and incredible. Getting yearbooks, they don't have yearbooks, you know, in their countries. Getting a yearbook and seeing themselves in the yearbook playing a sport is incredible. It's they love it. It has nothing to do with the size of city you live in. You can live in a teeny tiny little city like I do, Fuquay Varina, North Carolina, and my students love it here.
Michelle, if someone listening is thinking, I'd really like to know more about hosting an exchange student, what are the steps they need to take?
So if they are interested in hosting or they're thinking about hosting, I tell them to go out to the website, ie-usa.org, and read a little bit about it. The first step would be registering. The second step would be filling out your application and doing your criminal background check, which is free and fast. Usually we have that back within 24 hours. You just click a link on the application to do that. And again, it's free and fast. And then in the meantime, after you register, you'll be contacted either by myself or a local coordinator to help walk you through the steps. You provide 3 references. We come and do a home interview. You get to choose your student, and that's so much fun. And you also get to write a letter to the student. Typically, if your kids are old enough, I say everybody should write a little paragraph in that letter to the student because that's their first impression of you guys. And then you get to put pictures of your home and family on the application. It really should be a family thing. You should do it together. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, after your application is all filled out and you've chose your student, then the school has to accept. And once the school accepts your student, then contact begins and you can start getting to know your student before they arrive.
Do you have some final words you'd like to share with our audience about participating in an international student exchange program?
Just that it's absolutely life-changing, and that if you're thinking about doing it, now is the time. The schools, a lot of them, their registration for exchange students starts March 1st, April 1st, May 1st, and closes by June 30th. So now is the time if you're thinking about it. Again, if you're leery, you can always do a semester student. I always tell people, though, just know that they'll be leaving right after Christmas. That's a tough time to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're thinking about doing it, now is the time. We're expecting over 500 this year from our organization. It's absolutely life-changing for you and your family, and really for children of any age. You're giving them a gift, whether they're toddlers that are going to get a big brother or sister, or whether they're teenagers that are going to get a friend and a brother or sister. You open their eyes to a totally different culture, and that's a gift that you're giving them that will last a lifetime.
Participating in an international student exchange program is an amazing way to bring culture and adventure to your family without ever leaving home. So please consider hosting a student with international experience. And for more information, please visit the website at ie-usa.org. Michelle Bakke, the director of the Southeast Region of International Experience, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
No problem.
And if you'd like to listen to this interview again or catch another one that's aired on Triad Today, please visit 987simon.com, look under the podcast tab, and find Simon On Demand. This is Triad Today, and I'm Charlie, your host, on 987 Simon.